We at the Pet Collective Podcast are not medical professionals. We do offer advice, but please always consult your veterinarian before making any medical decisions.
This week, we're talking about understanding your pet's body language as a form of communication. What does your dog's bark mean? What does the position of your cat's ears mean? What is a calming signal? Plus, Allison's dog Peaches is a total butt sucker, and my dog Callie, she's got a tucked up vulva, you guys. We're going to talk about it.
If you don't like humans, that's understandable. I'd rather spend time with my furry animal. It's the Pet Collective, yeah.
Hey, I'm Allison Seeky.
And I'm Kyle Kittleson. Welcome to the Pet Collective. This is the podcast for pet parents and the pet obsessed. Allison, my dear, how are you?
Oh, you know, overthinking everything. How are you?
Well, good. I'm about the same. Allison, one of my favorite topics to talk about is body language with pets, because if you've ever wanted to communicate with your pet better, this is the education you need.
And we all do want to communicate with our pets better, you know? And until they come up with a translation software, this is what we've got.
Amen to that. And honestly, if my dog had a translation software, it'd be, where are you going? Where are you going? Where are you going? Can I have that? Can I have that? Where are you going now? Can I come? Where are you going? And then a nap. And then it would just be done for quiet for an hour. But
that's
our dogs
pretty
are
innocent.
She's an innocent girl. What's yours?
My dog is, she sucks her butt a lot. Sorry
she
to be so graphic.
She sucks her butt a lot.
So I don't know. I don't know if it's her genitals or her butthole, but she's got her mouth down there sucking quite a bit.
Oh my God.
I'm Allison, sorry.
I don't want to hear about this.
Well, I'm a little concerned about it. You know, I definitely,
you
when I catch her
be.
Doing it. Really? Okay, cool.
I've heard a lot of pet parents say, oh, my dog will lick her butt or lick her, you know, her whatever. But I've never heard someone say,
she's sucking.
God, she's sucking butt over there in the corner. I can't believe how much butt she sucks. It's like
she goes to town, and I've come up with different theories. Because she can go a really long time without being taken out to the bathroom. And so I'm like, maybe she's got a system where she's like,
oh my God.
not her butt, but maybe she's
this
like peeing in her mouth. I didn't mean for this to happen.
What?
Or maybe she just has an itchy butthole.
Go get your dog some help immediately. Like, this needs to be priority number one.
Well, you know, I don't want to micromanage her. And I definitely have encountered some pet parents who are all on top of their dogs every time they lick or chew or suck.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a certain amount of it that I allow, but if I see she's spending too much time in her nether regions, you know, I'm like, Peaches, don't do that. So she'll stop for a second, but inevitably she gets back to it.
One of when I've moved a lot with my dog Callie, and when my ex and I, we moved to this new town and we had to take Callie to the vet just to like establish rapport with a new veterinarian, you know?
Yeah.
And so the veterinarian comes in and she goes, because she's been, you know, looking Callie from head to toe, like everything. Like, this veterinarian did a thorough exam, and she comes in and she goes, well, Callie's vulva is tucked up. And when she said tucked up, she took her, like, her pointer finger and her middle finger and her thumb and then pointed them to the sky.
Oh.
So she said, her vulva's tucked up. And I was like, congratulations, I'm sorry, thank you. Like, I don't understand.
Is that like
if this is
versus
good
Audi?
Yeah,
belly button.
And she goes, well, do you want to get that addressed? And I go, I don't know, is it bad for her to have a tucked up vulva? And she's like, some parents don't really like it. I go, well, we're not those types of parents. I think she thought we were a gay couple who would be like devastated that our daughter's vulva was tucked up. When in actuality, we were like, girl, if your vulva is tucked up, like, let it free up there, you know, work it out.
As
That's
long
how
as
you
it's
were
not
made.
Uncomfortable. Yeah. Why
no,
not?
No. Yeah. So for all those butt suckers and tucked up vulvas out there, this is the podcast for you.
I love how that has nothing to do with body language, but no. Here we are, you know?
Let's talk about body language. I want to go to our first segment in this episode, which is going to be all about your cat's body language. Yes. Before I let you take this away, Allison, here's what everyone needs to keep in mind while they're listening to this. Your dog, your cat, your pet, 100% of the time is communicating with you. You, on the other hand, only listen maybe 1% of the time. So today we're going to take that 1% of listening and we're going to increase it to at least 50%. And we're also going to give you tools so that you can communicate back to your dog more effectively or your cat. So let's start with cats, Allison.
Yeah, absolutely. So cats are kind of mysterious sometimes, right? People misunderstand them as being moody or a little prickly. It could be for a number of different reasons. And by reading their body language, you can learn where they're coming from. Too often people are going to pet somebody's cat and they get scratched or bitten and they blame the cat for being ill-tempered. But hey, maybe here's some things to think about. What you're missing is an assessment of how the cat might have interpreted your gesture. Mm. If the cat is in a dark or confined environment that they can't easily escape from, that produces more stress for them. And so it might make them a little bit more on edge, which is why they, you know, usually like to relax in higher places that are open, like countertops on top of your bookshelf.
Well, and they'll also, all animals need this. They want the feeling that they can go somewhere if they wanted to or needed.
Of course, yeah.
And when you remove that, so if you were cornering your pet, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally, there could be some aversive behaviors that come out of that. And it's just a natural reaction. People take their pets' least desirable behaviors as an insult to them. It's not an insult to you. Your cat's not doing it because it doesn't like you. Mm-hmm. It could just be they're just reacting to their environment. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's not that the guys that I'm dating don't like me. It's that they feel trapped by the idea of commitment.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. You don't want to trap your animal. You don't want to trap the guy you're dating or the girl you're dating.
Yeah. Why do cats flick their tails?
Well, you have to take context into consideration. So it could be excitement. They could be happy, or they could be ready to mark their territory and spray urine everywhere.
Well, in context with any behavior, any body language from your pet is incredibly key. Just because your dog or cat does something inside the house, when they do it outside of the house, it can mean a different thing. And the most basic example of this is barking. Most people can tell if a dog is barking because they are excited or because they're scared or they might be aggressive. We as people can see that body language and most of the time make a pretty good conclusion, a pretty accurate conclusion. However, it's when we get to these little nitty gritty things like a cat flicking its tail where you're going to have to pay a little more attention. And over time, you're not only going to learn what a cat's tail flicker could mean, but you're going to learn what your cat's tail flicker means because nobody knows your pet better than you do.
Let's talk about cats' cute little ears. Okay. So when their little ears are normal and forward, it indicates that they're feeling confident or relaxed or engaged with you. But when a cat is protecting their ears by flattening them to the side, you can almost always be sure that they're feeling afraid. So that might not be the best time to come at them like in a jarring manner.
Yeah, and when we talk about body language especially and we use words like afraid, it's bordering on that anthropomorphic stage, meaning we're giving human characteristics to something that's not a human, and a cat is not a human. So are they truly afraid, or are they cautious, or are they stunned, or are they startled?
On high alert,
On high alert. So We've got to be careful that we don't have, because we, you and I would probably interpret the word afraid many different ways. And so we want to be careful that we're not taking our own history with those words and applying it into our animals. And look, this may sound really nitty gritty and in the weeds and people are like, gosh, I just want some fun, you know, body language talk on this podcast. And now we're like defining these words. But I'm only doing that because this is the type of nuances that you are going to have to discover when you make the commitment to learn about animal body language and build that type of communication with your animal. You know that if a dog's hair is up on its back, that that dog's got something going on. It could be aggressive, might not be, but you know something's going on. We're not talking about those obvious signs here. We're talking about those really subtle signs that you see every day, but you won't notice them until you learn about them.
Yeah, all the shades of gray, because it's not black and white, you know?
No.
I've always found the English language to be very limiting.
Oh, wow. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
That could be like the opening to your like one-woman show. You just walk on stage. And I always found the English language to be quite limiting. That's
and that's the only thing I say. No, then it's just silence, maybe some music, no other words.
Then you dance. And then you dance.
Yeah.
What can you, I know Anosh, is a cat parent, and he's got a cool trick related to, reading the body language of a cat's eyes. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So something I learned with a cat's eyes is that they become, on high alert when you're making direct eye contact with them. You know, cats are very visual with the eyes. And so if you gently bat your eyes or gently blink in a like slow blinks, cats all the way from small cats to big cats will take that as a sign that you're not a threat. You're relaxed. So if you're making direct eye contact and you're not blinking with a cat, they're going to be scared. But if so if you just meet it, even in the wild, like if you encounter a lion or something, if you blink slowly and just look off in the other direction, they're not going to feel threatened. They're just going to think you're relaxed and you don't care. And I've noticed that works on small cats too. Little house cats, they take well to you just slowly blinking, and they'll relax a little bit.
And sometimes cats do that back to you as well, right? Yeah. Like if a cat is blinking slowly at you, you know they're in a more comfortable state.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. They're all in the eyes.
So now I know I'm the animal expert here, but when I have heard different things when it comes to cats purring.
Yeah.
And this is where context plays a key. Mm-hmm. What does it mean when a cat purrs?
It can mean, again, a million different shades of gray. So it can mean that they're like feeling comforted and cozy, but it can also mean that they're in pain or they're feeling sick. It can mean that something is off.
Yes. That's where I think it's important. Obviously, the context is key, but one piece of body language does not necessarily tell you the entire story of what the animal is trying to communicate. And that's where you want to look more holistically. So if they're purring and not eating and avoiding being touched on their paw or something, something's going on. I've got to take this cat to bed, you know.
For cats specifically, other things that they'll do when they're feeling sick, they might hold their head down low or squint their eyes or hold their eyes closed. Their ears might just be a little droopy. I mean, it's the stuff like cartoons are made out of, you know? Yeah.
There you go. Let's talk about dog body language.
Okay.
Because this one is in my, I mean, the cat parents out there are going to go, no, cats are easier to read than dogs. I think dogs are easier to read mostly because when you walk into a house, most dogs are going to run up to you and give you a show. Most cats are going to be like watching you from a distance or they'll flee. And I'm going to read. So here we go. So with dog body language, there is something I want all dog parents to remember, and it's this phrase, calming signals. Calm, like I'm calm, calming down, calming signals. And this was, I forget the guy's name, I think he was like a Norwegian behaviorist, but he found that most dogs have 30 calming signals, around 30. Some will have more, some will have less. But these calming signals are how they communicate with other dogs and therefore with other people. And there's a story I just want to read verbatim because it really illustrates why this is important to learn. I'm just reading this verbatim from an article. Dad calls Prince and has learned in class that he needs to sound strict and dominant so that Prince will understand who is in charge. I'm not reading anymore. How many clients have told me, always the husband who says, don't worry, I'm the alpha. I'm really strict and use a deep voice with him. I'm like, okay, what big deal. Anyway, so understand who's in charge. Prince finds Dad's voice to be aggressive, and being a dog, he instantly gives Dad a calming signal in order to make him stop being aggressive. Prince will perhaps lick his own nose, yawn, turn away. Those are all calming signals. We'll talk about those. Lick his own nose, yawn, turn away, which will result in Dad becoming angry for real because Dad perceives Prince as being pigheaded, stubborn, and disobedient. So then what does Dad do, who's big alpha?
Doubles down.
Prince is punished for using his calming signals to calm Dad, and that relationship is so confusing for the dog. So imagine that from the dog's perspective. The dog perceives that Dad is coming in real hot and is like, oh, it's okay, Dad. Like, I'm cool. Remember, I'm not a threat. Like, I can see you're upset, but like, just so you know, I'm cool. And then the dad's like, oh, really? That's how you're going to talk to me? Well, punish. That is not a healthy relationship for anybody. This whole idea that you have to be the leader of your pack and your alpha and all of that nonsense. It's nonsense, okay? That's old school dog training. And if somebody's out there and that just triggered you and you're like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. That's because you learned dog training from an old school methodology that's very effective, but it's not the best we have. We are better at training animals today than we were in the 60s. We're in fact better today than we were in the 80s and 90s. This is the best time to learn the correct way to train dogs. And it is not, it's first reading their body language, but then not punishing them for truly doing nothing wrong.
Totally.
Did I rant too much, Allison?
No, I love that. I'm just like wondering all the different ways that that applies, you know, because I've heard so many times, make sure, you know, your dog or your pet knows who the owner is, right? Is that just, there's no...
It's nonsense. Because if that was... Now, on that side, it just doesn't do anything. Like, if some people say, well, I use a shock collar, for example, which I have never used. I do not advocate them. I do not think you need
My
to use
My landlord
them.
Asked me to.
Yeah, so no. I would say no to that. But I would say no to that, not because they're not effective. Shock collars are very effective, but I just don't agree with the methodology of shocking
totally.
Your dog when they don't do something.
Yeah.
So I think there are other ways that are effective that actually build your relationship with your pet. So let's go through some of these calming signals. One of the first ones you'll see your dog do is yawn. And most people, what do you think when a dog yawns?
I think, oh my gosh, you're so cute. I'm going to touch your tongue.
Okay.
And
not
I usually
the answer
do.
I wanted,
boop,
but I love
I
it. Yeah.
Boop it.
That's so funny. I don't recommend you boop any dogs' tongues that you don't know. That wasn't to
okay.
you, Allison. That was to the listeners. But yeah, if you want to boop your own dog's tongue, yeah, go for it.
Heck yeah.
But yawning, of course, it can indicate that they're tired. But in a lot of situations, it's them communicating that they may be feeling a little uncomfortable with whatever's going on. And they're using that calm or that yawn to try to calm and resolve the situation. So pet parents, try to remember the last time a group of people came over to your house. Perhaps your dog got very excited, they started jumping a little bit, they wagged their tail, and then right around after, you know, the people started to fill up the house, you might have seen them yawn. Now, they might have done a gazillion other things, but if you saw them yawn, that could indicate, whoa, Fido over here is saying, this is a lot of new people, I'm a little uncomfortable with all the new touching, all the new smells, all the loudness, all the people in our house, yada, yada, yada. I'm going to try to calm this situation down by yawning. Now, that was an over, like, I don't think they actually go through that thought process. It's pretty innate
right.
within them. They just do it. But that's how we as humans can start to read this behavior. Have you ever seen a dog yawn in a weird time?
Yeah, of course. And
yeah.
So are you saying that it helps calm them down or that it gives a calming effect to the situation, whatever it is?
So it's mostly to communicate. It's mostly to get the environment to calm down. However,
okay.
because it's Like if I was trying to calm down the room, I might go, hey, guys, easy, easy, shh. Mm-hmm. And just by doing that, I felt a little calmer too, even though I did the thing. So I didn't do it to calm myself down, but it did calm me down. Yes,
exactly. Settles you down a bit. Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Here's the really cool thing about calming signals is that all dogs everywhere, whether they've been raised by one person, by a pack of wolves in Europe, it doesn't matter. They all know the calming signals. So if you want to go see calming signals at play, go to a dog park and just watch a whole bunch of dogs interact. I will promise you, you will see calming signals left and right over and over and over again. And it doesn't mean, oh my God, all the dogs are stressed out. It just means this is how the dogs are communicating. This is how they talk to each other. Just the way you and I use words, they use calming signals. Let's go to the second one. You just did it because I can see you right now. It's
what did
licking.
I do? Oh.
Licking. Yeah, like... dogs, you'll see them, they'll lick their nose, just a real quick lick. Sometimes they'll just lick the around their mouth. And I'm not talking about after you give your dog food. Of course, they're licking their teeth and they're licking all the grossness off their face. But you might see a dog lick as they approach another dog, as another dog approaches. And that's the same message. It's, hey, like, all's good here. I'm good. Like, I hope you're good.
Are you talking mostly about like a couple licks or a lick here and there? Because the other night before bed, Peaches was just going off like she had been given peanut butter, but she hadn't. You know, it was kind of just like consistent. And I was like, are you just getting ready for bed or what's going on here?
Exactly. So I didn't see what you just described, but that's the perfect example. It could be many things because, again, we are guessing and making assumptions at the end of the day,
right?
Without actually seeing it and having some evidence. But my guess is there was something that was not sitting right with her, and it probably wasn't a physical thing. It was an environmental thing. And her, how she chose to communicate that uncomfortability in that moment was, hey, mom, what's going on? What's going on? But she can't say that. So she licks her nose. Now, she doesn't have to do 110 seconds. And she doesn't have to do 10 even. It can just be one quick lick. It's a quick little thing. And it can be super fast. You might not even notice it. But the dog is using that as a way to communicate.
Are there any other common calming signals?
Yes. One big one you'll see is when a dog will turn away their head. I actually, when I knew we were going to do an episode on this, I think Brandon, he's one of our producers, he sent over the outline for the show. And so I was looking at the outline and Callie, my dog, was laying down and I was sitting down. And she looked at me. And so I licked my lips. Licked my lips real quick. And then Callie turned her head away. And then when she looked back at me, I licked her lips. And then she turned her head away again. And then she looked back at me and she did it a third time. I licked my lips and she turned away. Now look, were we having coffee talk? Maybe, maybe not. She might have just looked her head away because she's like, all this fool is doing is licking his lips. I want to see what's over here to see if there's something more interesting.
Totally.
This is why you can't just take this as verbatim all the time. Context is everything. But a dog who can slightly turn its head or completely turn its head to one side is trying to calm down you know, whatever is in the environment that could be causing a little bit of that uncomfortability. So watch how they turn away. Now, if they're turning away because a squirrel ran by, then they turned away because something caught their attention. So
that's a huge difference.
Yeah. And then you guys have seen a lot of these, like everyone's seen a play bow, you know, when their hind legs are a little higher and their front legs are a little lower and they're soliciting play. And that's a great calming signal. Sniffing the ground is a huge one. It's especially in groups of puppies. You'll see it a lot. If you have your dog out, they might be really alert when a dog is approaching them. But as that dog starts to get closer, you might see them go to the ground and start sniffing. It's just all of that is them communicating to that other dog. That isn't an accident. It's not an accident that your dog started sniffing at that moment with this other dog approaching. That was your dog literally talking to the other dog and being like, hey, love that you're coming over here. Everything is going to be so great. I am like the chillest dog. Yeah, like I've already sniffed this area. It's all good. And the other dog is going to respond how he responds. But how this applies to us is where because I don't want people to spend their whole day watching their dog looking for these little minute calming signals. You'll drive yourself crazy. Okay, don't do that. Instead, pay attention to the calming signals when you're in a training session with your dog. If I'm working with Callie and she is yawning, she starts yawning. I am going to go, I might have pushed her too hard in this training session. She might be getting frustrated. She might just be bored with what we're doing. There might be something else in the environment that's causing concern, a smell I can't smell, a sound I can't hear. So, but what I would do is adjust the training session, and I might move to something else completely or stop and come back at another time because Callie's communicating to me, hey, I'm not totally 100% on board with what's going on right now. It doesn't mean she wouldn't push through. It just means, maybe not today. We all have those days, right? When we wake up and you're like, I will go do this, but I don't really want to, which totally. Is like me before every party I ever go to. I'm like, I don't want to go do this, but I guess I'm going to. But like watching me with the training gym. Sessions. Well, me in the gym is like, I'm not going there and I don't want to go there. So those are calming signals. For the dog parents out there who go, ooh, this I'm into this. Like, I want to know about this. You said there's 30. Well, what are the other 25? You're going to have a great time on the internet. Go Google calming signals or reach out to me. There's tons of them. Go Google it. It's really fascinating stuff. It'll really take your relationship to your dog. What you'll realize is how much your dog is talking to you. You don't realize it's all day, all day.
Now, it's all well and good to try and understand what's going on with our pets, but it's most important when they're not feeling well. So let's talk about body language signs in our pets that show us that they might not be feeling so great. It might be time to take them to the vet. You know, I just want to know, like, oh, is there something stuck in Peach's tooth? Or like, is this an actual physical sign that she's giving me to let me know I need to take her to the vet?
Right. My two big takeaways for that type of question is, one, many animals will be very good at hiding any type of hurt that they're feeling, any type of injury they're experiencing, because think about what would help them survive in the wild. What would help animals survive in the wild? In the wild, you're not like, you guys, my leg is bothering me. You know, you are always strong, ready, capable in the wild.
I can
because
keep
you don't
going.
Get, that's
yeah,
right.
This will be
right.
fine. It'll resolve itself. Yeah.
It's like you and I living in Los Angeles. You know, we just always put on the front that everything's fine. Things are going great. And we do not need any help.
There's a silver lining here.
Yeah. So that being said, you may have to look very closely to find these signs if your animal, if your pet is trying to hide that. If they don't try to hide it, the first thing I look at is weight and are they eating? Super simple to do. If there is excessive weight gain or weight loss on either end, that isn't normal. If I feed Callie more and she gains weight, then that's normal. But if you're feeding your dog the same thing and it's gaining weight, that is abnormal. We need to address that. Similarly, if they're losing weight but still eating. If your dog refuses food one time, I might just note it, but I'm not going to go call the emergency vet. But if it's continually happening, like, oh, every 3 weeks, she just doesn't eat for a day. Why is that? What's happening? What's going on? Is it a correlation with a different type of medication you're giving her? Is she getting into something that you're not aware of? I just discovered 5 days ago, you know, where Callie goes every day, three times a day for 45 minutes, and I can't find out where she is.
Where?
To the neighbor's tree where they dump all their bacon grease. And so she is under this tree eating bacon grease. So, like, if I didn't know that and she puked every night, I'd be like, oh my God, my dog's sick. No, my dog was just eating bacon grease out of the dirt. Like, that's what's going on.
So gnarly. Why did they just toss it outside? Is that a normal thing to do with your meat?
I think
meat
so.
Fat?
Like, that's a thing people do, I think, because you don't want grease to go down the drain. So you have to.
I have a receptacle, but I keep it inside. I just don't understand why you dump it on a tree. But not hey. Here.
Yeah. Maybe they're giving it to Callie. I don't know. I still have to go talk to them and apologize for my dog. But so those are the big ones. And then, of course, you've got to do this. You've got to do this, guys. It's so easy and no one ever does it until it's way too obvious. You've got to do a physical exam on your dog. At the very least, I do it twice a year. And it's something you can do at your house and you don't have to be a vet. You don't have to be a vet tech. It's super easy. You literally get your dog. And then you put your hand on every square inch of their body, of their back, of their tail, of their legs, into their paws. You lift up their lips and you look at their teeth. You look into their eyeballs. You look under their tongue. You look everywhere. And if there is a growth or something weird looking or something that looks gnarly, then you go get it checked out. By that, you don't want to be the person who goes, oh, well, they have this huge apple-sized thing hanging off the size of their rib cage. Okay, why didn't you know that? Why didn't
before
you see
it
that?
Was it the size of an
before
apple.
Before it was the size of an apple. And I get it, like, life happens. So I'm just saying, put it in your calendar twice a year to do a full physical exam on your dog and catch these things before they become issues. Do we have any questions from our pet collective audience?
Yeah, we do actually have a couple questions today. They come from the gram. Ophelia wants to know, what are some body language signs that a dog is going to bite?
Oof. Well, there are lots of obvious ones. You know, the hair is raised, some growling, showing of the teeth. However, the what's scarier is when there are no obvious signs that a dog is going to bite.
Yeah.
The... Let a sleeping dog lie is a famous saying for a reason. Do not wake a sleeping dog. Even when I approach Callie, who has the attitude and attention of a baby bunny rabbit, I do not do so in an aggressive way, in a startling way, and I don't even do it from the front. I will do it from behind, or I will just use my voice away from her, because you just never know what can happen. The other thing is if a dog is in some physical pain. So dogs who have just come out of a procedure, maybe they got spayed or neutered, for example.
Wearing the cone.
Those are dogs I would not allow my kids around. I don't care if they have a great history. I don't care if they'd never bit anybody. Right now they're in pain. And if a kid happens to put their finger into some scar or something or make them uncomfortable, you don't know what's going to happen. So I would look at those types of things more than I would the obvious signs that a dog is going to bite. And there's also differences in whether a dog would bite a human or another animal. But probably the biggest indicator of a future bite is the past. And I know that's a little hypocritical from what I was just saying, but it truly is. If a dog is 10 years old and has never bit anyone, it still can bite somebody, but the likelihood is going to be less, than if that,
it's not its normal dog, temperament.
Yeah. Had bitten 20 people in its life. So.
Yeah, totally. But I also just want to say on Peach's behalf, just because a dog might be growling doesn't mean that they're gonna bite.
Definitely not.
I think Peach has a little bit of Napoleonic syndrome, and so sometimes she just wants people to know that she's tough, but she would never hurt a fly. Okay, we have another question. This one is from Parth, also comes from the gram. What does it mean when my dog turns its back on me and sits right in front of me?
Okay, so I'm going to address something that wasn't brought up in this question, and then I'll address the question. I thought you were going to say that Parth was asking, sits right on my foot, because I get this question a lot. Like, oh, is my dog trying to be dominant by standing on my foot or sitting on my foot? And dog trainers from the 1980s are going to cringe when I say, no, it's not. Your dog is not asserting its dominance on you by sitting on your foot. Mm-hmm. It's just sitting on your foot. Hey, we don't need to look into it any more than that. Like, it's fine. Is your dog aggressive? Do we have any issues? No. Okay. Then there's no stop making drama. There's no drama here.
It's not a problem. Yeah.
No. This is where I'm going to answer the question based on what I think the answer to be, but I'm going to start it with this caveat, which is I don't know. I don't know what it means when your dog turns and its back and sits.
Sounds like it happens a lot to Parth. So Parth probably knows better than anybody, but
Yeah. And it could, and who is anybody to tell us exactly what it means? A, we would actually have to watch it. Mm-hmm. B, we would have to truly understand the environment. And even after that, we're still not inside the dog's head.
Yeah.
That being said, what it tells me is that your dog is incredibly comfortable with you. Any animal that would allow its back to be turned to somebody shows a lot of trust and a lot of comfortability.
I mean, when Peaches turns around and sits right in front of me, it means she wants me to scratch her back.
There you go.
She's positioning herself for the perfect scratching.
Yeah. And you do it. So guess what's going to happen the next time?
Yeah.
They're going to come by and sit down and get their back scratched.
Yeah. So what there, do you do, Parth, when your dog sits down and does that? Maybe that's what they're waiting for.
There you, actually, Allison, that is an animal behaviorist answer right there. I explained exactly what I tried to explain, because we just, it's probably a reinforced behavior, because we unintentionally reinforce behaviors all the time. As much as we can read our own pet's body language, mm-hmm. languages, dogs absolutely read ours, and they read it with surprising accuracy. Mm. Without us even training it, most dogs will pick up on us pointing and gesturing. They learn very quickly that when mom and dad move their hand to the right, that means I need to look over there, or we're walking over there, or mm-hmm. something's over there. And we don't train it. It's just them picking up our body language. They read our facial expressions. Notice when you come home, if you come home and then you realize, did I leave the upstairs bathroom on? And you make that face, mm-hmm. your dog might go, uh-oh. What's that face?
Totally.
Because they're reading your face. That was not trained. They picked it up themselves. So we are constantly communicating to them. They're picking mm-hmm. up on all of it. They are constantly communicating to us. We pick up on virtually none of it. Aww. And so it's our job to pick up the slack.
Yeah. It shouldn't be one-sided.
So I have a question for you guys.
Oh, you do?
Oh, what is this?
You never ask questions.
I never have any questions, but this week I do.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s, I was a freelance voice actor.
Oh.
And I was going through a pretty tough divorce. It was a child custody battle with my ex-wife, which is unfortunate. But the court was going to give her full custody unless I could find a steady job and a permanent place of residence. Freelance voice acting was tough back then, right? But it just so happened that my ex was looking for a new housekeeper. So I had this genius idea to dress up as an elderly Scottish woman and hide in plain sight so I could take care of my kids. I could get a steady job, have a place to live, right? It was kind of genius, but it was a tough charade to keep up. And I ultimately got busted and the judge deemed my behavior as perverse. But, it worked out. But I know what you're thinking, Anosh, isn't that just the plot to Mrs. Doubtfire? But it's not. And here's why. I didn't name myself Mrs. Doubtfire when I dressed up as an elderly Scottish woman. I named myself Barbara Broomsweeper. And that's because I think it's cool when people have names that match their job, you know? So my yes. question is, Kyle, what's it like to have a name that matches your job? Because it sounds like Kitty. It sounds a bit like Kibble. It's the perfect name for an animal behaviorist.
Totally.
Kyle Kittison is actually, I've never heard that before, ever. So
first time.
No, and that's honesty.
No.
And also, I'm kind of embarrassed that it took me well into half of your story to realize what movie we were talking about.
Oh, really? Yeah, I kind of got it right off the bat.
I was like, oh, which one is this again? I think so. I already have a drag name, so I guess my pet name is Kyle Kittison. I like it.
Yeah, I love that.
Allison,
Wait, no. First, Seeky. What's your drag name?
My drag name is Kylie Roro. It's not a pun.
Mm, I like that.
I have lots of pun drag names, but it was gifted to me by a group of friends, Kylie Roro.
Oh, I think pun drag names are kind of on their way out. It's more about like the flow and how it sounds.
Nothing compares to a great pun, but yeah. But
can
I
give you like one of the, this one's going to hurt to say, but one of the best pun drag names I've ever heard is Tulita Pepsi.
Because
it's like, it's bad, you know? It's like really bad. Like,
it's so bad that it's really good. Yeah. I would watch that.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Alice, Anosh, you acted like you had a drag name.
I don't. I'm just a huge fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, but I don't have a drag name. I should.
You're preaching to the choir. Yeah. Well, okay. So you're a producer. I promise you, by the next time we record, I'm going to have, because my friend does anesthesiology. Okay. So his drag name is Anesthesia.
Oh, love it.
Yeah.
So good. So I'm not saying I have a knack. I'm just saying I have a couple wins under my belt. I would like to help you with a drag name.
I think it's better to be given a drag name.
I agree.
Than to make it yourself. So yeah.
I agree. Allison, do you have a drag name or a pet name, I guess we're calling these?
Not really. I mean, most of my life I've been called Alley Cat. That's just what happens when some people call you Alley.
That's so great.
Kyle Kittison and Alley Cat. Well, now that you're better equipped to communicate with your pet at home, make sure you communicate with myself and Allison on social media. I'm at Kyle Kittison everywhere.
And I'm at Allison Seeky.
Fantastic. Well, while you're on Instagram, make sure you follow at The Pet Collective. And if you feel so inclined, they're also on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok. Plus, we want to hear from you. So send us your pet-related questions, and we'll answer them right here on the show. And if you're a shopper, go to petcollective.shop. That's petcollective.shop for tons of amazing things for you and your furry family. Guys, see you next week. Bye.
I can't wait. Bye.
The Pet Collective podcast is produced by Jukin Media and The Pet Collective. Head producer, Anosh McAdam. Associate producer, Brandon Kendall. And our original score is composed by Corey Celeste.